You are listening to Ellie on an Island, Episode 4, Braving the Wilderness. Hi everyone, welcome to this episode. My name is Ellie. I'm an aspiring writer based in Montreal. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast so far. The temperature dropped to the minus 30s here again as expected, and we're very much looking forward to the summertime. Today's episode is a self-help personal development book. Have you ever felt out of place in school, or out of place in your family, or even out of place in your own skin? Is this something you struggle with or have struggled with in the past? How important is it to you to fit in? Are you willing to fit in with people at any price, even if they don't stand for the same values as you? These are the main ideas of the book, Braving the Wilderness. The complete title of the book is Braving the Wilderness, The Quest for True Belonging and the Courage to Stand Alone by Brené Brown. Brené Brown is a number one New York Times bestseller author. How she describes her work, an area of research and expertise, is that she researches shame, vulnerability, courage, and empathy. Her new book, Atlas of the Heart, was recently released in November 2021. Braving the Wilderness was published in 2017 by Penguin Random House. As usual, I listened to it on Audible by Amazon. It's unfortunately not part of the Plus catalog, therefore you have to either use your one monthly credit to purchase it or you have to pay for it yourself. Sometimes Audible offers extra credits at a discounted price. She reads the book herself and is very good at it. She reads it relatively fast. The whole book of 163 pages in this print that I have is read in 4 hours 12 minutes. It contains 7 chapters. Chapter 1, Everywhere and Nowhere. Chapter 2, The Quest for True Belonging. Chapter 3, High Lonesome, A Spiritual Crisis. Chapter 4, People Are Hard to Hate Close Up. Move In. Chapter 5, Speak Truth to Bullshit. Chapter 6, Hold Hands with Strangers. Chapter 7, Strong Back, Soft Front, Wild Heart. The book seems a bit unpaced. Some chapters are more important than others, and it's a little bit rushed at some places. I've chosen the parts that were most important in my opinion. I'm going to start this episode by reading the definition of belonging as defined by Brené Brown from Chapter 2, The Quest for True Belonging, so we can get an idea of what precisely Brené means by belonging. Belonging is the innate human desire to be part of something larger than us. Because this yearning is so primal, we often try to acquire it by fitting in and by seeking approval, which are not only hollow substitutes for belonging, but also often barriers to it. Because true belonging only happens when we present our authentic, imperfect selves to the world, our sense of belonging can never be greater than our level of self-acceptance. Now, keeping that in mind, let's start from Chapter 1, Everywhere and Nowhere. While teaching a course on race and class at the University of Houston, she comes across a quote from Maya Angelou that she deeply disagrees with and cannot understand. Brené says it upset her, especially considering her struggle to fit in and belong started since kindergarten. Brené has a great respect and admiration for Maya Angelou. Maya Angelou was a memoirist, a poet, a civil rights activist, and one of the most influential literary voices of our time. She worked with Dr. Martin Luther King and was best known for her memoir from her childhood, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. This is the quote she said in an interview with Bill Moyers, former White House secretary, that aired on public television in 1973. I'm going to read it for you. You're only free when you realize you belong no place. You belong every place, no place at all. The price is high, the reward is great. This is her reaction upon reading this. That's just wrong. What kind of world would it be if we belong nowhere, just a bunch of lonely people coexisting? I don't think she understands the power of belonging. Belonging is essential. I have to say I completely agreed with her. Those were my very own thoughts coming across that quote. I think it's undesirable not to belong anywhere. I thought about it in the context of geography and geopolitics. The quote is saying I, personally, essentially belong to anywhere in the U.S. the same way I belong to Canada, the same way I belong to some other country. Spain, for example. Spain because it's a neutral country and I haven't lived there before. I personally would like to belong someplace. Or let me rephrase it, I'd like to call someplace on planet Earth home. So should I be able to live any place on Earth with the same degree of ease, happiness, and joy? This is the question I was interested in reading about. Now, in retrospect, I believe Brown and I were reading this in different contexts. She meant inside America. So this book doesn't address or answer my question. It deals with hers. Braving the Wilderness starts with a short memoir of Brené Brown herself. Her struggle to fit in and belong somewhere begins from a tender age, from kindergarten to be exact, and goes on until her adulthood. Let's sum up her memoir. It contains important parenting advice. Her family moves frequently. She's changing schools a lot. They initially live in Texas, then they move to New Orleans. She attends pre-K and kindergarten at Paul Habens Elementary on the West Bank of New Orleans. It was 1969, and as wonderful as the city was and still is, it was a place suffocated by racism. Her full name is Cassandra Brené Brown. The name Cassandra in the late 60s was a common name for African-American girls. Hence, Brené Brown, despite being a white person, wasn't invited to birthday parties of white classmates. She gets left out of things. The next year, her family moves to the Garden District, New Orleans, so her dad could be closer to Loyola University. She transfers into Holy Name of Jesus. She was an Episcopalian, one of the few non-Catholic students at school. After a year or two of being called out and sitting out, she's called to the office where a bishop is waiting for her. He hands her a mimeographed copy of the Nicene Creed, and together they go through it line by line. Then she's handed a note to take to her parents saying that Brené is now Catholic. When she was in fourth grade, they left New Orleans for Houston. In sixth grade, they left Houston for Washington, D.C. In eighth grade, they left Washington, D.C. and moved back to Houston. All this time, she didn't belong anywhere, but she felt like she belonged to her family. The saving grace was that all this time, her parents got along well. But then, as she enters middle school, their marriage comes to a miserable end, so she understandably seeks refuge outside home. She tries out for the drill team, the Bear Cadets, it's called. She claims she was an excellent dancer, but since she wasn't wearing the proper makeup and attire, she didn't make it to the team. No one had told her that she was supposed to wear school colors. She shows up like the girl whose parents fight a lot, and she doesn't make it. Now, it's easy to start preaching and say, well, that happens to a lot of people. You get a little discouraged, and then you have to get your spirits back up and try again. But she isn't able to do that. And to make matters worse, her parents can't properly comfort her. Just a simple, you should have been chosen, it's not fair, a word of comfort. Her parents remain silent. And that's what messes her up even more. She doesn't belong to her family either, which is the most dangerous thing. She turns into a girl running around with the wild kids and hiding weed. There's something important on page 14 that I'm going to read from. Even in the context of suffering, poverty, violence, human rights violations, not belonging in our families is still one of the most dangerous hurts. That's because it has the power to break our heart, our spirit, and our sense of self-worth. It broke all three for me. And when those things break, there are only three outcomes, something I've borne witness to in my life and my work. One, you live in constant pain and seek relief by numbing it or inflicting it on others. Two, you deny your pain and your denial ensures that you pass it on to those around you and down to your children. Three, or you find the courage to own your pain and develop a level of empathy and compassion for yourself and others that allows you to spot hurt in the world in a unique way. She first goes through the first two options, then eventually moves on to option number three. The fighting at home gets worse, and she hides it from her friends. So shame of secrecy is added as well. Now, what's interesting in her narration is that the feeling of being the one and only person in the world to deal with this. If you're going through any of these, remind yourself that you're not alone. Others have experienced undesirable conditions as well, and it's going to stop someplace. She grows up and engages in every dumbass self-destructive behavior you can call. Then she meets her husband, Steve, and he helps her. He comes from a dysfunctional family as well and identifies that pain easily. She swings from one extreme, finding value in fitting in, to another, finding value only in being different, defiant, or contrarian. Those are two sides of the same coin. Then she's invited to do Super Soul Sunday with Oprah and meets Maya Angelou in the backstage. She sings her own poem to her, "Like a tree planted by the river, I shall not be moved," and tells her, "Don't be moved, Brené." It was as if she bundled up all the courage she'll ever need in her entire lifetime and handed it to her. That kind of ends her struggle with that quote. "Like a tree planted by the river" is part of the poem Maya Angelou sang on the Pulse of Mourning at the 1993 presidential inauguration and made her of natural interest. I'm going to read it for you. "Each of you, descendant of some past, on traveler has been paid for. You, who gave me my first name, you, Pawnee, Apache, Seneca, you, Cherokee Nation, who rested with me, then, forced on bloody feet, left me to the employment of other seekers, desperate for gain, starving for gold. You, the Turk, the Arab, the Swede, the German, the Eskimo, the Scot, you, the Ashanti, the Yoruba, the crew, bought, sold, stolen, arriving on the nightmare, praying for a dream. Here, root yourselves beside me. I am that tree planted by the river, which will not be moved. I, the rock, I, the river, I, the tree. I am yours. Your passages have been paid. Lift up your faces. You have a piercing need for this bright morning dawning for you. History, despite its wrenching pain, cannot be unlived, but if faced with courage, need not to be lived again." 6 months after that, she's invited to give a speech somewhere, and the event organizers on two separate occasions give her guidelines to not speak about faith given the business context of the speech and to refrain from cussing since she'd risk losing some of the faithful audience. She decides not to attend, that she shall not be moved. She talks to Steve and says this is frustrating. Anywhere she goes, she doesn't belong. Steve points out that she belongs to herself. She makes her own wilderness. She is the wilderness. In those pivotal moments, things shift for her. She understands the vulnerability and courage of standing on your own and the meaning of Maya Angelou's quote. True belonging turns into her research subject. The chapters of the book are elements common in true belonging. 1, people are hard to hate close up, move in. 2, speak truth to bullshit, be civil. 3, hold hands with strangers. 4, strong back, soft front, wild heart. This begs the question, what is the wilderness? Belonging so fully to yourself that you're willing to stand alone is a wilderness, an untamed, unpredictable place of solitude and searching. It's a place as dangerous as it is breathtaking, a place as sought after as it's feared. The wilderness can often feel unholy because we can't control it, or what people think about our choice of whether to venture into that vastness or not. But it turns out to be the place of true belonging, and it's the bravest and most sacred place you'll ever stand. The definition of true belonging as crafted from the data is like so. True belonging is the spiritual practice of believing in and belonging to yourself so deeply that you can share your most authentic self with the world and find sacredness in both being part of something and standing alone in the wilderness. True belonging doesn't require you to change who you are. It requires you to be who you are. Braving skills. You don't wander into the wilderness unprepared. Standing alone in a hypercritical environment or standing together in the midst of differences requires one tool above all others: trust. To brave the wilderness and become the wilderness, we must learn how to trust ourselves and trust others. The 7 elements of trust emerged from the data are these: boundaries, reliability, accountability, vault, integrity, non-judgment, and generosity. Boundaries, you respect my boundaries. Reliability, you don't overpromise, you're aware of your competencies and limitations, and are able to deliver on commitments. Accountability, you own your mistakes, apologize and make amends. Vault, you don't share experiences or information that are not yours to share. Integrity, you choose courage over comfort. You choose to practice your values rather than professing them. Non-judgment, we can talk about how we feel without judgment. Generosity, you extend the most generous interpretation possible to the intentions, words, and actions of others. Another interesting topic mentioned in the book is this: covered it all in leather. Chodron used the lessons of Indian Buddhist monk Shantideva to make a very powerful analogy about moving through the world constantly pissed off and disappointed. It's from a video transcribed by Brown in the book. I'm going to read it for you. Chodron starts, "This lousy world, these lousy people, this lousy government, this lousy everything, lousy weather, lousy blah, blah, blah. We're pissed off. It's too hot in here. It's too cold. I don't like the smell. The person in front is too tall and the person next to me is too fat. That person is wearing perfume and I'm allergic to it. And just, ah." It's like being barefooted and walking across blazing hot sand or across cut glass or in a field with thorns. Your feet are bare and you say, this is just too hard. It's really hurting. It's terrible. It's too sharp. It's too painful. It's too hot. But you have a great idea. You're going to cover everywhere you go with leather and then it won't hurt your feet anymore. Spreading leather everywhere you go so you can cover the pain is like saying, I'm going to get rid of her and I'm going to get rid of him. I'm going to get the temperature right and I'm going to ban perfume in the world. And then there will be nothing that bothers me anymore. I'm going to get rid of everything, including mosquitoes that bother me, anywhere in the world. And then I will be a very happy and content person. We're laughing, but that's what we all do. That's how we approach things. We think if we could just get rid of everything or cover it with leather, our pain would go away. Well, sure, because it wouldn't be cutting our feet anymore. It's just logical. It makes sense, right? But it doesn't make any sense, does it? Shantideva said, if you simply wrap the leather around your feet, in other words, if you put on shoes, then you'd walk across the boiling sand and the cut glass and the thorns, and it wouldn't bother you anymore. Then Brené talks about experiences of collective pain and joy, called Moments of Collective Assembly, and I like this part. It's about why people choose to worship collectively when they could do so at home in solitude, like attending a funeral. The collective pain we experience in a funeral is one of the most powerful experiences of inextricable connections, like showing up at a sports game, like upsetting over the Space Shuttle Challenger on FM 1960, a busy four-lane thoroughfare close to the suburb of Klein in Houston, where she lived while in high school. This is about page 125. Now let's move on to my favorite part of the book, page 121, You'll Never Walk Alone, YNWA. I didn't change the I to she. A couple of years ago, I clicked on a tweet by TED owner and curator Chris Anderson that read, when football equals religion, spine-tingling Aussie rendition of You'll Never Walk Alone. The link took me to a YouTube video of 95,000 Australian fans of the Liverpool Football Club gathered at the Melbourne Cricket Ground for a soccer match. For 2 minutes, I watched a stadium of Liverpool fans sway away in unison as they sang the club's famous anthem, red scarves held high over their heads and tears streaming down many of their faces. I was surprised to find myself fighting back my own tears, and based on the video's 6 million views, you can be sure that it wasn't just Liverpool fans. She says 6 million, but the one I looked on YouTube had 11 million views. Think about it. Why does that happen? What brings 95,000 Australian fans of a club somewhere else in the world together? That is an example of a moment of collective joy. The flip side of this is people belonging to common enemy intimacy. It's a counterfeit connection and the opposite of true belonging. If the bond we share with others is simply that we hate the same people, the intimacy we experience is an easy way to discharge outrage and pain. It's fuel that runs hot, burns fast, and leaves a trail of polluted emotion. Courage and the collective. Brené talks about vulnerability a lot in her work. Vulnerability is a metric for courage. You can't be courageous without being vulnerable. Vulnerability is the birthplace of love, joy, trust, intimacy, and courage, everything that brings meaning to our life. Most of the time, we approach life with an armored front for two reasons. We're not comfortable with our emotions, or our experience of trauma has taught us that vulnerability is actually dangerous. The definition of vulnerability is uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. But vulnerability is not weakness. It's one of our most accurate measures of courage. Are we willing to show up and be seen when we can't control the outcome? This brings us to the last section, a soft front and a strong back, page 153. Have you ever caught yourself doing something fun, and then with guilt, you ask yourself, why am I doing this with all the evil and all the wrong in the world? Why am I like throwing a birthday party, or why am I obsessing over the details of a cupcake? She explains this and talks about this in the last part of the book. And she says it's not only okay, but actually necessary to spend time on things like throwing a birthday party and being happy in spite of all the bad going on in the world. Yes, you have to care about the bad in the world, but you shouldn't forget about joy. It reminds us of what life is all about. We have to maintain our strong back and our front soft. It's not a one-time effort, but man, it's hard to keep the front soft when there's so much hurt. Today's episode, I hope you've enjoyed listening to it and hopefully learned something from it. Please subscribe, whether you're listening on CastBox or Apple Podcast, and I will talk to you in my next episode. Bye!